It's Saturday night. That means it's time for the Don Tony Show.
The wait all week long is finally over. Get Don Tony's perspective on current affairs in the world of pro wrestling and much more. The Don Tony Show.
And now, your host, the man, the legend, Don Tony.
All right, good morning, everybody. It is Saturday, November 12th, 2022. My goodness, we are less than 2 weeks away from Thanksgiving. We are less than 2 weeks away from, well, we're about 2 weeks away from Survivor Series. Next weekend is AEW's Full Gear. Wow, a lot of shit coming up quicker than we, I think, expect. So I hope everybody's having a great weekend. I am Don Tony, your host for this morning. I want to thank you for joining me. Today we're going to get into a little bit of what went down on SmackDown, a little bit of Rampage, a couple of news tidbits as well. And don't forget, Sunday, 8.05 p.m., we're going to do the sit-down with yours truly, very laid-back, pretty much Q&A, chat, super chat, you know the deal. And we're going to start figuring out who we're going to have on for Podcast Forbidden Door. I don't want anybody to send any suggestions in yet. I'll put up a thread. All I say is keep in mind the idea of having the person on is someone you would not expect to be on and someone that I think a majority of you would be curious or interested to see on the show. So, you know, that's the criteria. You know, I know some of you have personal favorites, but, you know, unfortunately, 98% of everyone out there doesn't know who the person is. This is not just an interview thing. This is more of a casual conversation. But, wow, yesterday, interesting SmackDown. We have most of the participants set for your male side of the War Games match. Now, keep in mind, as some of you have pointed out in previous weeks, two War Games matches doesn't necessarily mean that's the only Survivor Series matches on the card. And I agree with that sentiment. The only issue I have with it is, you know, the amount of time it takes to have a War Games match. Remember, you know, you start out with two people, you know, and every few minutes a person is added, no pinfalls, no submission, just brawling. And once every person is in the match, that's when War Games officially begins. And it ends when someone is pinned or submits. So by the time you get to that outcome, you know, how long are we talking here? 45 minutes? You know, in some cases close to an hour, and we have two going down. And as of right now, it's still 5-on-5. Yesterday, based on what we saw on SmackDown, a lot of people think it's going to be 4-on-4. I personally think if it's 4-on-4, it's just for time constraints. I think for time constraints more than anything else, because if you have two matches, plus remember, you got introductions to these wrestlers. Everybody's got to come out with their theme song. So when you're talking about two matches already filling up close to 2 hours of the premium live event, and we are going to get some individual matches as well, you know, it starts to make you think, you know, how many additional Survivor Series type matches are we going to get? Now, as we've talked before, and this is why I don't like Survivor Series matches, I love the concept and I love the pay-per-view, but, you know, what do we always talk about? You have 5-on-5. You'll have the opening match start, 4, 5, 6 minutes of good, fun wrestling. Then someone will get pinned. And then before you know it, 10 seconds later, someone gets a fruit roll-up and they lose. Then you get two people that are brawl outside the ring and they get double count out. So you always get this flurry of decisions within a very, very short amount of time. That's the only reason why I'm not that thrilled about Survivor Series matches. If they're going to do at least one, I'd like to see 5 from Raw versus 5 on SmackDown. You don't have to have it's on and have, you know, people showing up and causing disarray. But I think having 5 from Raw versus 5 on SmackDown, you know, you take 5 of the best. You know, with all due respect, I know a lot of people are not thrilled about Braun Strowman right now, but he would be perfect for a Survivor Series match. You look at some of the others out there that are not having a match right now. My God. You know, you start thinking about people like Seth Rollins and AJ Styles and others. I'm sure we're probably going to have a match in some capacity, but do Raw versus SmackDown. You know, you don't have to have any GMs involved. You know, it's for bragging rights. So, yesterday we had a couple of interesting things go down for SmackDown. I think the one that everybody is probably talking about the most is this. No, LA Knight is not like breathing into Bray Wyatt's ear, and Bray Wyatt is giddy and chuckling a little bit. No, I sounded like Lily. I did sound like Lily. No, but look, it was an interesting interaction yesterday. Now, I obviously can't show you the whole segment. I'll get hit with strikes, and we don't want that on this channel. But what happened was LA Knight was doing a backstage interview segment, and same thing happened with what happened with Alexa Bliss and Asuka. All right, and I could show you a little of it. And basically, as LA Knight is doing his interview, the moth Uncle Howdy-esque, you know, flashes show up on the screen. LA Knight is not happy about it.
That I am right now.
All right, we'll go back to that. So he's like, the fuck is this? Why is this happening? Now, listen, you take your fandomhood for Bray Wyatt and put it aside. Yeah, Bray Wyatt, why are you being a douchebag for? Why are you interfering with his segment? You know, so LA Knight is like, look, I don't want that garbage. This is my time. I don't want to deal with that shit. And then what ends up happening, Bray Wyatt shows up. Bray Wyatt shows up. And, you know, first it's kind of like the Bray Wyatt Firefly Funhouse. You know, my name is Bray Wyatt. But now we can be friends, you know? So they're having a little bit of a back and forth. And Bray goes on this little diatribe, you know, talking about how his whole life people have been telling him his rage was going to make a monster out of him. And for the longest time, he's been pretending that he's not proud of the things that he does. He doesn't know how true that is anymore. And then he starts looking at LA Knight, and he's like, I'm asking you, how far are you willing to go? So LA Knight looks at Bray Wyatt and basically says, you know, what you should do is you should go back to your romper room, play with your puppets, and stick them anywhere that gives you that special pleasure feeling inside. That's fine with me. And Bray Wyatt's a little offended by it. Shit flashes on the screen again. And the next thing you know, Bray Wyatt nails a headbutt to LA Knight. I think I saw this come in right before we went live. This is from Ronnie C. Morning DT. When I saw Bray headbutt LA Knight, he thought of what I said before, that Bray will start to randomly get into it with people in the back. Where do I think it will go next with Bray? Thank you for the $10 super chat, my friend. A lot of people think this is going to lead to a match. I would love it. I would love it because I want to see Bray Wyatt back in the ring, period. It's not a matter of, you know, do we want to or do we not want it? What happened last night is something that I said on this show a few times, that there is no feuds right now with Bray Wyatt other than Bray Wyatt versus Bray Wyatt. Uncle Howdy and soon to be Uncle Harper, the inner demons of Bray Wyatt, they're trying to get through his head. So that is the feud right now. So if Bray Wyatt is going to start just instigating with people, that is Uncle Howdy trying to get through his mind. Uncle Howdy was very happy yesterday, if you really think about it. But this is not leading to a feud. I mean, if you said to me tomorrow, Bray Wyatt and LA Knight are going to face each other at Survivor Series. Okay, fine. I don't need major marquee, major builds. And again, I don't want anybody to try to use the AEW reference. Well, they have matches and they don't have builds. I never criticized that. You know, we talk about what other people say, you know, but I don't criticize that. You know, I've been talking about Acme Instafeud since 1997, but I personally don't think this is going to lead anywhere. I personally think, you know, Bray Wyatt will randomly get into it with someone else. Last week it was a sound guy in the back. This week it was LA Knight. Next week, who knows? You know, it's the go-home show next week, the Survivor Series. So you may not see anything come out of this. I personally think if Bray Wyatt was going to face LA Knight, especially next week on SmackDown, I think they would have advertised it. I think they would push it for the whole week. Bray Wyatt's in-ring return. But I just don't feel it. I don't feel it. The feud is Bray versus Bray. And, you know, I brought up with JD last Thursday that I think it's going to be a cinematic match at WrestleMania. Bray Wyatt, you know, battling his inner demons. Maybe that's when we see a cameo from Bo Dallas. That's probably where we'll see a cameo from Eric Rowan and a few others. But, you know, that's an awful long way. I mean, let's put it in perspective. Logan Paul. Now, it appears that Logan Paul's knee injury is not as bad as we originally thought. In fact, he's already, you know, training lightly. Trust me, if something's torn like that, it ain't going to suddenly glue itself together, you know, in a matter of days. I don't think he had surgery. So, you know, hopefully it's nothing tremendously serious. But look, think of this. Even if he had a torn meniscus, a slight tear, there would probably be enough time for him to possibly return in time for WrestleMania. Now imagine Bray Wyatt taking that much time off and then having a match at WrestleMania. You know what I mean? So that is awful long time. You're talking about the Royal Rumble getting past the Raw and Bray Wyatt's not involved somewhere. So the more I think about the time element involved, the more I say to myself, Bray Wyatt's got to have a match before WrestleMania. Even if it's random matches, just, you know, like we saw yesterday, even if it leads to him versus LA Knight for one night, I don't know how you stretch that all the way to WrestleMania. I mean, Bray Wyatt's been back now for, you know, a little bit of time. Was it 6 weeks? Will we, it's about that, you know. We still got, what, like, how many weeks to WrestleMania? So they've gotten to this point. They've already introduced Uncle Howdy. They've already introduced the battle of what's going on in his mind. What you see on the screen is his mind put to life. So now you're going to introduce the Uncle Harper element to it. Where does that go? Does Bray Wyatt start, you know, doing a little bit of Waylon Mercy type stuff where he's very happy, he's, you know, acting good, and then he starts, you know, getting really maniacal and evil, and then after it's over, you know, he feels calm and he's happy again. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I'm still enjoying what I'm seeing. But, you know, let's also remember, not everyone out there is enjoying this stuff. It's a very small audience. But if this stretches for 3-4 months, you know, and there's still like just random vignettes and segments, I mean, you know, we're going to get numb to this production. You know, like I saw yesterday on Rampage, they did another video package for the House of Black's return. And I'm excited. I'm very happy that Malakai Black feels good enough to return to AEW. It's going to be great. But as I'm watching the video package and I'm looking at social media's reaction and I see this unbelievable excitement, LFG, LFG, oh my God, it's amazing, you know, unbelievable, better than the Elite's video packages. You know, I say to myself, you know, anybody could get an unbelievable video package. It's what you do afterwards is what matters. You know, and on a very small scale, look at Xia Li. You know, she had arguably, in NXT, in my opinion, the greatest video packages leading to a return than anybody in recent memory. When she's being tortured with Boa and all this other, I mean, those packages were crazy. I mean, that's some of the best work I have ever seen. Look where it ended up. Look at Boa. I mean, just look where it ended up. Then, Xia Li, I'm a huge fan of Xia Li. Remember when she was missing for 7 weeks, you know, we put her on milk cartons and everything else. I'm a fan of Xia Li, but Xia Li may go down as the person who has had the biggest, most well-produced vignettes hyping up a return that really amounted to nothing. Because think about SmackDown. Remember, you know, my landlord, he take very bad care of my family. My landlord, he harass my family. I guess I like Andrade or Rush. She had these incredible vignettes and it led to nothing. The people like, oh, Trios champions. Yeah, future Trios. Yeah. And I'm thinking back at the first round, I'm like, wait a minute. There's no different mindset in AEW. There's been no overhaul. You know, there's been scares backstage, but there's been no overhaul. What makes anybody think that the House of Black is going to be incredibly different now? Were promises made? If that happens, when do they get the spot? Right now, it's the Death Triangle. Then it's going to be the Elite. You know, and people think, oh, the Dark Order still should be getting their opportunity. And then what happens if Adam Cole is able to return? You know, and then you have, you know, Kyle O'Reilly. I mean, come on. You know, you have a pizza with 8 slices on it, you know, and you're basically saying, like, everybody's going to get a slice, but there's 60 people, you know, waiting for pizza. So I'm excited that the House of Black are going to return, but what? Where does it go next? Are we going to see AR Fox versus Top Flight have a feud with them? Nothing against those guys. So, you know, the Bray Wyatt stuff, it's going to start getting old sooner than later because well-produced shit is great and everything, but you keep banging that out there and people realize, like, wow, this guy came back and they're just doing psychological shit and that's the only way that they got him back. I mean, Bray Wyatt's not the greatest wrestler in the ring. And I don't care. As I've always said, I don't need a 4-star match to be entertained. Entertain me however you can. But after a while, this is going to start getting old. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, false hope, Ray. But you know what? False hope is good. It's good in life. It's good with wrestling. It's good with a lot of things. You know, I mean, if you lose hope, you know, then everything sucks. You know, there's a lot of things that we go through in life and you hope for this and you pray for this and you hope for this. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't happen. But hope is what keeps people going, you know. So I do not have any issue with hope. But after a while, hope turns to frustration. And we're talking about entertainment right now. We're not talking about real life. But you know what? So far, Bray looks like he's having a good time. So far, I like what I see. I just want to give it another month to 6 weeks. And I want to see where we are in 6 weeks with the besides the Uncle Harper character being introduced. So, all right. Also yesterday, we had the Viking Raiders return, and lo and behold, they were not alone, everyone. Max the Impaler showed up with the Viking Raiders. No, that's not Sarah Logan. Did you see this stupid controversy going online over the last 12 hours? All right. For those that didn't see SmackDown yesterday, the Viking Raiders returned with Sarah Logan. Sarah Logan looked great. You know, for people that were asking me, like, how did she do that? You know, like, because she took, like, her finger and she took, like, her forehead and, like, literally drew a perfect line down her chest, almost simulating blood. That, from what I understand, is fingerprint ink. That is fingerprint ink. And apparently, you know, if anybody, I don't know how many of you out there have ever been fingerprinted. I've been fingerprinted recently for a TSA, you know, for the airport. But, you know, that ink you can take off. But I thought she looked spectacular yesterday. It's good to see them back. Now, to be honest with you, it's still the Viking Raiders. You know, and I'm not saying that to throw shit on the Viking Raiders. Like, once they went back in the ring, they were doing what they were doing before. I mean, the only difference is that Sarah Logan is there now. And Sarah Logan headbutted B-Fab yesterday, knocked her on her ass. Zelina Vega's like, I'm out of here. She goes through the crowd. She don't want none of it. But, you know, like, I don't see anything different. Like, when they were taken out yesterday, Hit Row and Legato, you know, it just felt like, you know, you could have seen that segment 6 months ago and it would have felt the same way. The only difference is that Sarah Logan is now back. So we'll see where it goes. But the controversy yesterday is, you know, we have a wrestler. You know, if you follow Impact, you've seen Max the Impaler, Japanese wrestling, obviously. And a lot of people are now saying that Sarah Logan is a ripoff of Max the Impaler. Now, I'm going to show you both of them side by side. You be the judge. In my honest opinion, Sarah Logan's outfit is very reminiscent of what she had before, with a little bit of Viking Raiders graphics added to it. I think the only thing that is similar, and Sarah Logan has had that hair before, the only thing similar is kind of like the makeup for the first half of the face. Yeah, they're kind of like sisters from other misters. They look like doppelgangers. But I don't think Sarah Logan in any way is a ripoff of Max the Impaler. Yeah, Linux, I agree with you. She looks like Hellblade. Yeah, that's a good one. I just thought that was unfair yesterday for Sarah Logan. You know, I mean, I understand that Max the Impaler has a lot of fans that feel, you know, a little shortchanged because Sarah Logan is coming out looking similar, but they're not similar. They have two totally different styles, and Sarah Logan painting half her face, you know, I don't know. I mean, the funny thing is, if Sarah Logan, you know, ate like 200 McRibs in the next 2 weeks, they probably would have almost the same physique. But I think it's just, you know, looks. So a lot of you tune in live say you never have heard of Max the Impaler before. Well, you know, you're not required to. So I'm not gonna be like here, like others, like, you don't know. You got to know your history. No, I know a lot of people don't know. But it was nice to see the Viking Raiders and Sarah Logan back on TV. Let's see where it goes. But again, I'm not going to lie with you. I felt the same Viking Raiders vibes I felt 6 months ago when they first turned heel, when they were going at it with the New Day and others. And just think, they ended up going over on the New Day, which is pretty impressive. They left them laying a couple of times, and they still had to get repackaged. They still had to get repackaged. So anybody notice lately more and more criticism online towards Triple H? First of all, I don't think Austin Theory is being buried. I think people are just looking at stats, numbers. But I'm noticing more and more people are now saying, like, you know, when you really start dissecting Triple H bringing all these people back, you know, it's not as good as you think it is. My biggest gripe is the finishes. Distraction finishes, blind tags. I mean, if we took a shot for every blind tag that has happened since Triple H took over creative, I would love, I mean, if someone out there was that bored that wanted to do like the 6 months prior with Vince and 6 months with Triple H, how many blind tag finishes we got, I would be fascinated. But, you know, you really dissect it. And I think Crown Jewel was the perfect example of it. There was nothing about Crown Jewel that felt like, yeah, this is Triple H booking this. If Vince would have produced Crown Jewel, I don't think it would have been anything different whatsoever. And you know what? I'm not knocking Triple H. I'm not agreeing with those people because I'm going to stick to what I said a year ago, 2 years ago, 6 months ago, 4 months ago, 4 seconds ago. 1, 2, 3, 4. Triple H has been part of the WWE machine for decades. Triple H hasn't been sitting in a corner with an iPod listening to Motorhead for 20 plus years. Triple H has been part of creative. Triple H has been in the business meetings. Triple H has been part of corporate. Triple H has been part of every aspect of WWE. There was no, you know, the Triple H that we had for a while, you know, isn't like this split personality. Like he did NXT trying to produce the stars of tomorrow. The problem is that Triple H those wrestlers could only go so far. And proof be told, those wrestlers went to AEW and their numbers didn't go that much higher. They didn't go that much higher. So Triple H did a great job on NXT with the black and gold. Did a spectacular job. As I always say, look at the main roster. Look at how many people came through NXT. From the Shield to the Four Horsewomen. You go down the line. So it's not like, oh, WWE fucked Triple H and erased everything he did. No, they didn't erase a damn thing. Triple H's legacy of NXT is shown on your television every Monday and every Friday. The thing is, though, is, do you give wrestlers $300,000 contracts to fight in a building with 200 fans for a rating of 700,000 viewers that doesn't sell merch, and once every blue moon you do a takeover event? That is not cost efficient for a publicly traded company. If Tony Khan was at the helm, and it's a privately owned company, and it's his money, I guarantee you Triple H in the black and gold would probably still be what it was before. But as a business, and as a publicly traded company, you could not keep what was before. You can't have Adam Cole and Keith Lee and everybody else with those very, very expensive contracts in NXT wrestling in front of 200 people. Then if you say, well, make NXT not as big as Raw and SmackDown, but make it close, then you end up with an ECW. Then you're taking a small company, you know, that was, it was too small. You know, that's what happened to ECW. ECW was a small company that tried to be too big. So you don't want, you know, the brand, which is meant to be small, developmental. You don't want it to get too big for what it is, because then you develop nobody. You know, imagine keeping all those stars, and in the process, you have a Tiffany Stratton coming out there and wrestling. Imagine having the black and gold, and then you have a very young Carmelo Hayes. Well, Carmelo Hayes wrestled before NXT, but you start getting wrestlers that have no wrestling background, and they're mixed in with cards with Adam Cole. You would have people losing their shit. The fuck is Adam Cole jobbing out to Tony D'Angelo for? The fuck is this? With the So something had to give. So... But, all right, we got a little off-track. That's okay. The Usos, as if there was any doubt, the Usos have made history. They are now your longest reigning WWE Tag Team Champions of all time. For all the New Day fans out there that are very upset at this still, you know, remember, the New Day's Tag Team title reign doesn't disappear. Doesn't get erased. So even if the Usos keep the belts for another 100 days, 200 days, when we look at back at wrestling history, the Usos will be number one. The New Day will be right there, number two. It would be funny, you know, if they go in the Hall of Fame and the Usos get inducted by the New Day, you know, and they talk about their tag team reign. We're the ones, you're the twos, you know, but listen, as far as this generation goes, having the Usos number one and New Day number two, I don't think anybody really complains about that. Sure, it's not what tag team wrestling was similar to in the 90s and the 80s, and you go back. But for this generation, if you're going to have tag teams hold reigns like that, I don't think you could do any better. And the Usos have proved, you know, no disrespect to FTR or anyone else out there, you know, but like I've always said, the reason why the Usos are number one across the board is they have wrestled 110 times this year so far, might even be more than that. And you look at AEW with FTR and you take away the IWGP and the AAA matches and the six-man tag matches and the singles matches, they've wrestled six times in 2022, seven. You know, if you really think about it. So, you know, you're talking about a team that has been around for 15 years, but, you know, they went from two guys that a lot of people felt were too small to be considered legit, you know, with the face paint. And they were fun guys. I still remember they were with Tamina. But the Usos have proven that they earned this reign. The New Day earned this reign. Demolition back in the day earned their reign. This was not, you know, having the belt, being out injured for 3 months, and that's, you know, gets added to your time anyway. They have worked this entire time through injuries, no complaints. Give a lot of credit to Jimmy Uso, especially when you think about, you know, some of the troubles personally in the past with the Uso. I mean, give those motherfuckers a lot of credit because they turned shit around big time. And congrats to the Usos. And listen, let me tell you something. I am one that has been kind of sick and tired of seeing the Usos and the New Day face each other. Because with Vince especially, it was always the go-to. Vince, I think we all agree now, and I've used this comparison before. Any of you football fans out there, any of you remember prevent defense? That is a tactic where, you know, you basically, I mean, I don't watch football like I used to, but, you know, some teams will have a type of defense that they have a lead. They want to just maintain the lead, and, you know, they're going to just get very, you know, very conservative and just prevent. You know. And it seemed with Vince McMahon, that's what it felt like for me, looking back on it now. You know, Vince, I think, was very much afraid many times to go outside the box and just really shake things up. No matter how many times he would say it on TV, we're going to shake it up. Never felt like it would happen. Remember Triple H, when he came out with the McMahon fit, we're all listening. We're listening. So Vince, it felt like, okay, you know, whenever the Usos were in a lull, we'll put them up with the New Day. Whenever the New Day were in a lull, and we'll put the Usos. And I thought it got really, really tiresome. Yesterday, it felt completely different. They put on a performance, and it felt pay-per-view. Not only did it feel pay-per-view, even the two counts towards the latter part of the match, you know, kicking out of the double, you know, splash, kicking out of, you know, just the super kicks, the outside, you know, moves where Jey Uso, you know, got planted, you know, from Xavier Woods from the top rope, but still ran in and broke up the count. This felt yesterday something I think has been missing in wrestling for far too long. And that is, if somebody is fighting for a championship, if somebody is trying to win a championship, somebody's trying to retain their championship, somebody's trying to make history, you know, you want to leave everything out there. It's so important that you'll die for it. I don't mean that physically, literally, but you'll die for it. And we've seen way too many times, oh, championship match, oh, championship eliminator match, championship contenders match. And it just feels like a regular fucking match. You know, like it didn't feel like somebody really wanted it because it never was interpreted in the match itself. It never felt it in the match. Yesterday, watching them break up in any other match would have been a three count, but breaking up two counts and breaking up, it got to a point where a lot of people out there thought the New Day may actually win this. When Jey Uso got knocked out outside that ring towards the end, believe me when I tell you, even I said, I was like, would they dare fucking end it the day before? Then it would be funny if the Usos lost it and then won it the next day back, and then it would be a combined reign, but then it would be tied if they could do that. That would be wild, but that's awful. That would be stupid. It'd be wild, but it'd be stupid. Those guys put it all out there yesterday, and I loved it. Usos get the win. I don't know what storyline leads to this now, because someone told me late today, right before I went live, that Xavier Woods posted a tweet saying, you know, I don't have anything else or something like that. I don't know what that actually is. I haven't looked at it yet. But Usos now are the longest reigning tag team champions. And good. You know, I will not deny SummerSlam, I truly felt that the Street Profits, that was their shot. That was their moment. If you could have built a storyline and a feud to culminate with a tag team title change, the Street Profits beating the Usos at SummerSlam is probably the best that could have ever come, and they did not win it. And let's also be honest. Since then, the Street Profits have been beyond in the mud. And don't just give me injury excuses. The Street Profits have not been the same since they lost at SummerSlam. But even though I truly felt that that was their time to get it, something has changed with the Usos. And it's not just corpsing a little bit with Sami Zayn stuff. It's not just the segments, but now I think there's a lot of people out there that, with the exception of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, I think a lot of people out there want the Usos to keep these titles. That it feels like, you know what, these motherfuckers have earned it. They're stepping up. You know, we hear about, you know, the minor injury, but still an injury. I mean, you use your hands all the time to Jey Uso and still working and, you know, doing things like nothing is wrong. I think the fans have truly turned the corner with the Usos as well. So, but, you know, but the Usos yesterday, they retained the tag championships, beating the New Day. Phenomenal match. After the match was over yesterday, a little backstage segment with the Bloodline minus Sami Zayn. Roman Reigns wants the Usos to join him later on. They got some business to take care of inside the ring. We don't know what the business is, but, you know, we found out later what that was going to be. We get the backstage segment with Bray Wyatt, LA Knight, as I showed you earlier. Now, we get to the World Cup. All right, the World Cup started yesterday, the tournament. Remember, this is to kind of pay tribute to FIFA, who is doing their World Cup. This is why this is happening. This is not the first time WWE has done a World Cup. But they announced the participants yesterday. And I got to be honest with you, this is kind of a mixed bag, in my opinion. Nothing against Jinder Mahal, but this guy has not wrestled for WWE in how many months, and he's in the tournament. Yes, I understand you have to represent some countries in this tournament, but there were definitely some others that could have been in there as well. But for those that didn't see SmackDown, the participants in the World Cup are Mustafa Ali, Shinsuke Nakamura, Ricochet, Braun Strowman, Jinder Mahal, Sami Zayn, Butch, and Santos Escobar. Now, yesterday we had Santos Escobar defeat Shinsuke Nakamura due to distractions from Legado. Escobar hits Shinsuke with the Phantom Driver. Then later on in the night, we had Braun Strowman beat Jinder Mahal. So now Braun Strowman advances and Santos Escobar advances. Now, next week, we're getting Mustafa Ali versus Ricochet. And next week, we're getting Butch versus Sami Zayn. Now, I don't know where this is going to go. I know that there's quite a few of you out there that want to see Sami Zayn win, want to see Sami Zayn take on Gunther, maybe Sami Zayn defeat Gunther. And now everybody, with the exception of Solo Sikoa, has a title. I don't feel like they're going that route. Besides, we still, this is a big deal. WWE has not made the match official as of this recording of this show of, you know, 4-on-4 at Survivor Series. Because last night, we could go one step ahead right now. Last night, towards the end of the show, the Bloodline come out, minus Sami Zayn. And before Roman Reigns could say anything, he's interrupted by Sheamus and the Brawling Brutes. Sheamus gets on the mic. He declares war. Get it? War games. And they're brawling with the Bloodline. And then here comes Drew McIntyre as well. So a lot of people think right now it's going to be Roman Reigns, Solo Sikoa, and the Usos versus the Brawling Brutes and Drew McIntyre at Survivor Series. That's only 4-on-4. I think, you know, until they make it official that it's 4-on-4, and I still don't believe it's going to be 4-on-4. I think it's going to be 5-on-5. You don't do 5-on-5 on the women's side and 4-on-4 on the men's side. I think that's foolish. I think maybe if Sami Zayn loses in this tournament, maybe because of the Brawling Brutes interfering, then maybe Sami Zayn ends up with War Games. And then when Butch advances, maybe the Bloodline caused Butch the match as well. The big question then is, who is the fifth person on the side of the Brawling Brutes and Drew McIntyre. A lot of people think Kevin Owens would be the most obvious choice, especially if Sami Zayn's on the opposite side. So right now it's still 4-on-4, but they have not made that official, so we'll wait and see. But, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday. So, as I told you, we have Braun beat Jinder, and we had Santos Escobar beat Shinsuke. So now the other two matches that we have to have is Mustafa Ali versus Ricochet, Sami Zayn versus Butch. And I can't help but to think about what went down early this week with Braun Strowman and his tweeting, and Mustafa Ali with that little one-liner, you know, someone show me how to get fired. Remember, that shot from Mustafa Ali was at Braun Strowman. Is anyone feeling what I'm feeling? Do you think that it's possible that WWE may try to turn that Braun Strowman tweet, even though he deleted it? Could it be that we may end up getting Braun Strowman versus Mustafa Ali in this tournament? Could we see this turn into a storyline where Braun Strowman is getting into it with Flippy Flippers, as he called it? So, I don't know. I'm just thinking one step ahead. Could we end up with a match between Braun Strowman and Mustafa Ali in this World Cup, especially after what went down on social media? I would not put it past WWE of trying to turn that into a storyline. But here's the problem, though. Do I think WWE would have Mustafa Ali go over on Braun Strowman? No. No. As of right now, I think to myself it could be Braun Strowman versus Gunther for the Intercontinental Championship. That is right WWE's alley. You know, Braun Strowman, obviously, he screwed up online. And props to him for keeping his mouth shut even after the Jeff Jarrett remark on Dynamite. And look, a lot of people out there were, you know, this week saying like, oh, AEW can't keep WWE people out of their mouths. This time around, I don't blame him at all. Because Braun Strowman really, that was totally unnecessary. And I'm a Braun Strowman fan, obviously. But it was totally unnecessary for him to say what he said on Twitter. Now I'm just wondering if WWE is going to turn it into a storyline. So, yesterday, I got a clip for you. Yesterday, we also had this match to determine not only the new number one contender for Ronda Rousey's championship, but obviously someone who is not going to be part of the Survivor Series team. A lot of people thought all along Shotzi Blackheart's going to be at War Games. It only makes sense. She's got the tank. I would have liked to have seen Shotzi host War Games. I think that would be cool. I could see Shotzi like they did, you know, with NXT, but with a little War Games twist to it where she's all dressed in like that Mad Max type of outfit. And she's declaring War Games. You know, I thought that would have been good. So yesterday, to determine a new number one contender, we have Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez, Xia Li, Lacey Evans, Sonya Deville, and Shotzi Blackheart. One of those women are going to take on Ronda Rousey at Survivor Series. So during the match yesterday, we had a little bit of a scare. And look, some people have blamed Raquel for having a table too far away. Some people are blaming Liv Morgan for not pushing off hard enough. Personally, I think the extreme stuff that WWE is trying to do every week with Liv Morgan, stop trying to be overly creative with it. All right. I mean, throwing all the chairs in the ring, you know, it's a cool spot and everything like that, but now they're trying to get too creative with it. You know, you're going to put someone through a table, put someone through a table. You know, if you're going to lay someone out, but when you have five women battling, every woman is for themselves. They're fighting for themselves. Maybe this is not the right time to try to do extreme stuff. Or if you're going to do it after the match. Do it in the match. Do something. But they tried to do it during the match yesterday. They got a little too cute with it. And this is the result. Watch your screen. I can only show you about 5 seconds worth. Watch your right.
Meanwhile, Liv Morgan
Oh. If a human, they were impersonating the 24/7 championship, and the table was the garbage pail. They were all 24/7 titles, and it didn't hit the garbage pail. Look, it looked scary. I watched it in slow motion, and thank God nobody got injured from it, but they sold it like they did. And sure enough, Shotzi Blackheart pins Lacey Evans, so Shotzi Blackheart gets the title shot at Survivor Series. So, I was holding that 24/7. I was going to tweet it, but I don't know, man. Twitter the last couple of days, you know, it's just, it's not the same. I had Twitter blue before because I like being able to edit my tweets. I like being able to upload longer videos. But then I get this message from Twitter blue, Twitter, about 4 days ago, like, oh, your Twitter blue subscription will be canceled as of November 10th. And then you can upgrade the other thing. And so I went in and I canceled it. So now people are saying like, oh, if you didn't cancel it, you could have just converted over and this and that. Now they removed Twitter blue because there's so much fraud going online. All Twitter needed to do is you want to have that blue check mark, you got to submit ID. Your information has to match the thing. Put ID. Just submit ID, not just a credit card, submit ID. And make sure that the information in the account, the profile, matches the ID. And they didn't do that. And a lot of fraud accounts came up with blue check marks, and now they had to pull the whole thing. So it is what it is. But like I said, what pisses me off now is, you know, I talked about this the other day. You know, now there was always, a lot of you may not know this, and I'm going to bring it up because it's probably something you should know, especially over the years. How many times have you tweeted something really heartfelt, emotional, something really, really sincere to somebody that you like? Doesn't have to be wrestling, but someone with a blue check mark. Sometimes some of you say, hey, you know, it's my grandmother's 95th birthday. She absolutely loves you and your movies. Can you give her a birthday wish? 9 times out of 10, your shit's ignored. And the reason why that happens, most of the time, it's not because anybody's being spiteful towards you, but there's always been a setting on Twitter that if you are verified with the blue check mark, you could have a setting that only the notifications that you see, the only ones you see, are from verified people also. So people get verified, and then they put that setting in there, and now they only see notifications from other people who are verified. So unless you vanity search your own name, they never see your shit. That's why with a lot of people, even in wrestling, when they, you know, before they got verified, oh, they're mingling. So then once they get verified and they put that search setting in there, now they don't see your stuff. So now a boatload of people that I always socialize with all bought the blue check mark. And now I'm like tweeting stuff like that and none of them see it. None of them see it. Now they have a separate column where you could, the fuck out of here. Seriously. So it's the last couple of days have been quite strange. But, you know, I was going to comment that they were human 24/7 titles in that spot. So, but it's all right. That's what we're here for over here. So if we have to only have convos here, it's all good. So at Survivor Series, Ronda Rousey versus Shotzi Blackheart. I don't know how I feel about this match other than Ronda is going to have to do a lot of selling. It feels very, very one-sided. Now, after the match was over, Emma was in the back giving a little congratulatories to Shotzi for winning, and she is greeted by Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. Shayna Baszler chokes out Shotzi Blackheart. So next week, we're getting this. Now, guys, gals, we know WWE creative and how they work. Anybody out there think that there is any chance Shayna Baszler is going to win this one? You're going, this is the go-home show to Survivor Series. Either Ronda Rousey has to cause a disqualification or Shayna Baszler has to like put a hold on and refuse to break it and Shotzi wins by DQ. I can't see any way that Shotzi Blackheart loses this match. You know, you almost feel like going into Survivor Series has got to give the suspension of disbelief that Shotzi Blackheart, she could win this thing. So if she gets choked out, by Shayna Baszler, even if there's a distraction, which, you know, WWE loves doing, you know, you got to feel Shotzi's got to come out with the upper hand on this one. So I got bad feelings about this match next week. Bad feelings. So, Braun Strowman over Jinder Mahal, like I said earlier. And that pretty much was SmackDown because we talked about all the matches. Now, how SmackDown closed, as we said before, Roman Reigns, Bloodline come out, minus Sami Zayn. Before Roman could say anything, Sheamus, Brawling Brutes come out. Sheamus declares war. They get in the ring. Drew McIntyre helps as well. And we go off the air with four Brawling on Four. So we now know eight of the participants in the War Games match. The only question we need to still have answered is, will it end up being 5-on-5 or 4-on-4? I personally think it's going to be 5-on-5. It has to be 5-on-5. You don't have 5-on-5 with the women and then only 4-on-4 with the men. I don't think that would work. But again, Sami Zayn is the only person that could be on that team. It's got to be the Bloodline versus whatever. It's not the Bloodline and, you know, and choose whatever heel you want. It's got to be Sami Zayn. So I think they wait until next week and the decision for Sami Zayn's match. So we'll see what. Now, remember this. You know, we still have another week before Survivor Series. So after next week, we'll be, you know, in the finals to determine who's going to face Gunther for the Intercontinental Championship. Could that person wrestle at Survivor Series? I don't think Gunther is going to defend that title at Survivor Series. Because remember, whoever wins, that's the day before Survivor Series. So, you know, when you get down to the finals, that means that person's going to fight the next day versus Gunther. I just feel it feels like a main event for the SmackDown after Survivor Series. So, decent show yesterday on SmackDown. By the way, you know, as we mentioned briefly the other day, it is the 25th anniversary of the Montreal Screwjob. It was 25 years ago this past Wednesday that Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels had that infamous match leading to, you know, Bret screwed Bret. And look, there's been a trillion documentaries about it. There's been countless interviews. For me personally, it was surreal when it went down because I had just started my, yeah, I had to fix that. I just started my hotline. I started my hotline around, I think it was, I don't know if it was April or May of 1997. But, you know, just imagine, you know, I started my hotline and this is ECW's first ever pay-per-view. And then we have, you know, the invasion of ECW on Raw. And then we got, you know, things going down with WCW, NWO, and then getting a little bit of attitude starting to happen, seeing RVD and Sabu wrestling on Raw, RVD especially, you know, having multiple matches. And then Survivor Series comes around and all the rumors of Bret Hart going to WCW. Bret Hart gets the, you know, the 20-year contract, and we think Bret is staying. But not only this, but my favorite wrestling documentary of all time, and I don't think it'll ever change. My favorite wrestling documentary of all time is Wrestling with Shadows. Bret Hart, you know, the documentary. Because if any of you out there have never seen it, you really, really got to see it. Not just, I know most of us are sick and tired of the Montreal Screwjob. It's not about that. But what blows me away is you think about how protective WWE has always been as far as people behind the scenes allowed to, you know, like to like just document stuff. Yeah, you get people that could do interviews and get to, you know, go be backstage and, you know, do what they do. But when you watch Wrestling with Shadows, as you watch everything, remember, it's 1997. Yes, Vince McMahon already said it's sports entertainment, the cat was out of the bag. You know, he was doing that for obvious reasons with taxes. So Vince had already said a trillion times, this is sports entertainment. But to see, you know, the amount of authority the people behind Wrestling with Shadows was able to procure, You know, these were not buddies of Bret Hart's. These were not buddies of, you know, the DX. You know, it's not like with AEW, the Elite, that they have their own producers following everybody around. You go back and you watch Wrestling with Shadows, it'll blow your fucking mind that how are these guys allowed to witness this much behind the scenes? And like just everything that went down with Bret Hart, it almost seems too perfect. Like, you ask yourself, and I ask you this, this is probably something that I think a lot of people always forget to ask. How would have Wrestling with Shadows ended? How would that documentary have ended if Bret remained in WWF at the time? Because you think about the entire documentary, what would have been the storyline? If the storyline would have been, okay, Bret ends up staying and he's with WWF, like, where's the controversy? What was the purpose? What was the purpose of that documentary? Think about it. If Bret stayed, what would have been this documentary? Oh, we're just walking around. Why follow Bret during this whole time? He signs the deal. Okay, great. You know, what would it have been? 30 days with Bret? Like, that's the question that I always ask. What would this documentary have been? What would have been the plot? What would this have been if Bret stood in WWF? That's why I always say it feels too fucking perfect. You know, do I think that the screw job is a work, as people use in wrestling? No, I don't think it was a work. You know, there was a moment for me, and I still have it recorded somewhere. One day I'll pull it out of my old hard drive and I'll show you. But one of the weirdest things that happened where I was something when they filmed the midget Bret Hart the next day. And I'll share with you another day. We're not going to get into it here. We got not enough time to talk today. But, you know, you just look. And let's also be honest. I mean, the friction between Bret and Shawn Michaels was ridiculously heated. I mean, we all knew that. I followed Dirt Sheets at the time, hotlines. I started my own hotline. So everybody knew the hatred, or I shouldn't say hatred, the animosity that Bret and Shawn Michaels had for each other. But, you know, somebody sent me an animated file this morning. I'm going to show you. And I sincerely apologize if this offends anybody out there. But, you know, I have not watched that match in a very long time. Because in 97, we watched it a trillion times. I watched it 5 years later. I watched it 2 weeks after, 10 years later. But I completely forgot how vulgar the signs were at the time. And just take a look at your screen. And this is just a quick clip of Shawn Michaels entering the ring. And look at some of the signs that not only made TV, but the cameraman, the production people in WWF thought that it was good to put this on TV. Anybody remember this? Just look at this. Look at the center of the sign. You'd think they would have taken that sign away. Look. Now, they weren't saying that Shawn was a fun, athletic guy. I mean, that's pretty wild when you look at that. So, look, I remember shit with Roddy Piper in 1985. So those signs weren't just innovative in 1997. It went back well beyond that. But I think that might be one of the reasons why WWE doesn't show a lot of the full match, because, you know, some of those signs, they weren't confiscated. And, you know, you got to remember, too, this is not justifying that, but remember the controversy with Shawn Michaels and Playgirl at that time. If you want a nice detailed story about that, go on my history section, This Week in Wrestling History, and on my website you could do it, and on the search area write Shawn Michaels Playgirl, and you'll get the history episode that I did. And not only did I talk about it, but we talked about the whole interview that he did as well. And there was a lot of buzz that Shawn Michaels, you know, liked his M&Ms with peanuts as well as plain. So it was just a weird controversy at that time in the mid-90s. There was a lot of controversy with Shawn Michaels and his sexuality in 96, 97. So Different times, man. Pretty wild. 25 years, everyone. 25 years. It's crazy how time flies. So, all right. Let's talk briefly about AEW Rampage. Now, this was the lineup yesterday. We had Brian Cage defeat Dante Martin in the Eliminator Tournament. Now, remember what I said last week. It could be Cage and Archer after all of this, or it could be Cage and Starks after all of this. Ricky Starks and Lance Archer did not wrestle yesterday. They said that he was not cleared to compete. I just think they didn't have enough time. So instead, that will happen next week, that match. Yesterday, we had Bandido taking on Rush. And, you know, the big news coming out of this was not only did Bandido get the win, but shortly thereafter, they announced on social media that Bandido has signed with AEW. Look, we've talked about it a few times already. People assume that he signed the same day that Tony Khan offered the contract with him. He didn't sign right away. He didn't sign it until this week. So Bandido, that's his reward. He beat Rush. So Bandido advances. We had a face-to-face yesterday with Jungle Boy and Christian Cage and Luchasaurus. Jungle Boy says that he wants to put the odds against himself. He wants to fight Luchasaurus in a cage at Full Gear. Not only does Luchasaurus and Christian accept, but Luchasaurus basically drops Jungle Boy onto a chair, lays him out, chokeslams him onto the chair, leaves him laying. So that is a cage match that will happen at Full Gear. Nyla Rose beat Kayla Sparks, hit Jade Cargill's finisher, and then mocked Jade Cargill a little bit. So Jade Cargill comes out with the baddies. Jade gets at Nyla Rose a little bit, but she gets out of Dodge. So that match will be going down at Full Gear as well. Orange Cassidy, this was a fun match, but it was a clusterfuck as well. Orange Cassidy was with Best Friends of Danhausen. He beats Lee Johnson, who was with The Factory, Cole Carter, Nick Camarato, and QT Marshall. A lot of interference there, but they closed out the night with Orange Cassidy keeping his belt. Trying to tease a little dissension with Jake Hager and Claudio. Jake wants to shake Claudio's hand. Claudio, big honor guy. Hey, Ring of Honor, big honor guy. Jake Hager extends his hand. Claudio won't sign it, shake it. So that's pretty much your Rampage yesterday. It was a decent show. You know, I think all the outcomes, as we always say, they're always pretty much obvious. The Brian Cage-Dante Martin match, I think, was a toss-up. So it was good. I think now with Dante Martin able to team with his partner again, Darius, Top Flight being back as a tag team, they'll probably focus more as a tag team going forward. So, you know, Rampage was okay. You know, I think this time around it may break 500,000 viewers. I think it'll be very close to it. Maybe it'll be like 486. You know, we'll see. Some news that you might be interested in. Cain Velasquez. You know, he does have a lot of a wrestling tie to himself. Remember Saudi Arabia? He's been in jail for, 263 days? You know, he basically shot who he thought was a person who molested a family member of his under the age of, I don't know how old kid was, but I think it was like 12. But he found out that somebody molested, a family member. He took out a gun and started shooting up a car. Problem is, he didn't hit the right target. I think he hit the guy's father. So he got arrested, charged with attempted murder. And he's been in jail without bail being offered to him for, 263 days. A couple of days ago, the judge allowed Cain Velasquez to be released on $1 million bail. Not bond, everyone. Bail. So they had to put up enough collateral to equal $1 million. So Cain Velasquez issued a statement. He said, quote, "I just feel blessed, ready to go home, be with the loved ones, family, friends, and make something positive of this whole situation. Just thank you to everyone who had my support. I love all of you. Just always continue to be better as a person, always do good things, and just make something positive of this terrible situation. My family and I were going to do that." Judge told him, "Don't fuck up. Don't make me think I made a mistake by giving you bail." So, listen, a majority of the wrestling world, the MMA world, and a majority of the people that I've seen out there that know the situation, they all seem to be in the corner of Cain Velasquez here. My honest take on it is this. My honest take is that if somebody molested my niece, my nephew, 10 years old, 12 years old, 18 years old, you molest somebody in my family, someone's going to want to fuck you up big time. So Cain Velasquez, he snapped. He snapped. And I think the only way this guy avoids serious jail time is if they plead not guilty. I don't want to say by reason of insanity, but, you know, this was so devastating to him that he just lost it. His mind was not in the right place. I think that's his only chance of avoiding any long jail time. This alleged pedophile, and we have to say alleged because he hasn't been convicted yet, you know, it's ridiculous that that guy had house arrest and Cain Velasquez sat in jail for 8+ months. The one thing you have to understand, though, is we can't be vigilantes. If somebody did something to my parents or did something to my wife or did something to my African gray, you know, I would take matters in my own hands, you know, and the only way that I wouldn't is if I was able to convince myself, don't ruin your own life because of a piece of shit. That's very, very hard to swallow. And I don't know what my reaction would be. You know, any one of you or me could say, yeah, if I was at Cain Velasquez, I'd try to blow him away as well. You don't know until you're in that moment. And the problem is you can't take matters into your own hands. And he ended up shooting the wrong person. At the end of the day, he shot somebody. If somebody broke into my house and I chased the person and the guy turns around and he tries to shoot at me and I accidentally shoot and kill someone else, you know, I'm probably going to have some serious legal shit in front of me. Cain Velasquez, as a human being, we all feel bad for him. We can only imagine what he went through. The problem is you can't just grab a gun, take matters in your own hands, and blow someone away. He should be very lucky he didn't kill that guy's father. Because look, as much of a piece of shit the guy is that you know, looks like he did what he did, the father, you know, he had nothing to do with it, and he got shot. And at the end of the day, you can't just, could you imagine if you just let that go? You know, then everybody thinks that if they're in a similar situation, they can take the matters in their own hands. You can't do that. As much as I would want to, as much as you would want to, you can't do that at the end of the day. I am surprised that the bail was so high. I was very surprised. But he's out of jail. We'll see what ends up happening. Somebody asked me, if this ends up all getting resolved, do I see Cain Velasquez ever returning to WWE? My answer is yes. I think if this all gets settled without him doing any long jail time, I could see him coming back. I think, you know, the wrestling world, you know, would welcome him to make a return. You know, it's still, we don't condone what he did. You can't. As much as you want to, you can't. Laws are laws. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. All right. CM Punk. Thank you, Mohammed Sori. He said, Sami Zayn had a death in the family. He wrote it on his Twitter. I appreciate that. You know, our condolences for Sami Zayn as well. That probably explains why he was not on SmackDown yesterday, but still, they put him in this tournament. So, you know, we have to wait for the outcome of this World Cup and his match next week to see if he ends up being part of Survivor Series. So, all right, CM Punk. I don't know if you're all aware of it, but CM Punk returned to television a couple of days ago. He was at the CFFC 114, and that is the Cage Fury Fighting Championships. Yes, I do have it written down. I always get the other F wrong. I know it's a Cage Fighting Championships, but he returned to commentary. I tell you the truth. He looks, I don't know. I mean, it's not just the suit and tie. You know, a little bit longer hair, a little bit of extra Just for Men hair dye. He looks like he's relaxed. He had a different presence about himself. You know, a lot of buzz is a little remark that he made. And I don't know if it was actually a shot at the Elite. I felt maybe this was more about him missing seeing the MMA fights. But if you're curious of what CM Punk said, here you go.
Wow. Let's not do that
it's
anymore.
Back. All right. So great to have you, man. Great lineup of fights, but it's always a little bit different when we got CM Punk in the building.
I'm happy to be here. I've missed you. I've missed everybody watching at home. I've missed the fights, and tonight I'm not going to do that.
We're on UFC Fight Pass all the way through, so we appreciate you joining.
Maybe the part where he missed the fights, and tonight I'm not going to do that. So maybe that's the little dig to the Elite. But he looks rested. He looks good. He's letting his hair grow longer. Kind of reminds me more of the CM Punk from the mid-2000s with his look. But, hey, you know, he has made his return to TV, did some commentary. You know, I checked out a little bit of it online, and, you know, he seems happy. He seems happy. So we'll see what happens, you know, if there's any other legal ramifications that come out of this. So, all right, we're going to wrap up tonight talking about one more thing. And that is John Cena in WrestleMania. A lot of buzz going around that John Cena is going to wrestle at WrestleMania. And this being WrestleMania Hollywood, expect a huge Hollywood influence on WrestleMania. More than we have had in recent years. Now, don't report this as news. I have been trying to get this answer for a while. I got this about a week ago, and I'm going to share it with you now. WWE is planning on doing spoofs of certain Hollywood movies, similar of what they did years ago. Remember when they did Basic Instinct, where they did Christian and Chris Jericho? They're going to do new Hollywood spoofs with wrestlers. So we will get a 2023, you know, upgrade of doing the Hollywood spoofs. What movies they do, I have no idea. If I find out any particular movies in general, I will definitely let you know. But they are doing that. They are planning on doing it. So if you want to report it as news, go right ahead. You want to write it as sausage, go right ahead. But this something that was the thing I was trying to find out more than anything. Now, as far as John Cena goes, all the buzz for a while was John Cena versus Austin Theory. Didn't happen at this year's WrestleMania, and that was a good thing because I personally think Austin Theory is in a much better place. Again, I don't buy this shit online that he's being buried by Triple H. That people are just looking at stats. The guy has had some amazing matches. Seth Rollins was the most recent one. The guy is getting tremendous heel heat from the crowd, not go-away heat. He's handling himself great. Trust me, WWE is not burying Austin Theory. In 3 to 6 months, people will write, oh, WWE had a change of heart about Austin Theory. No, you fucking got it wrong. You got it wrong. I don't know where these people are getting this perception. Why? Because he lost the fucking briefcase? Let me ask you all a question. Seriously, you can write an answer if you want or not, but I ask you a question. If Austin Theory cashed in that briefcase and won any WWE Championship right now, with the exception of 24/7. Would you have accepted it? If he would have pinned Gunther, came out there, cashed in, and beat Gunther. If he would have came out there, pinned Seth Rollins, Bron Breakker, Roman Reigns, anybody with a singles check, would you have said, wow, it was cool, Austin Theory, he cashed in a briefcase and he fucking won. That's awesome. No, everybody would be like, this guy ain't ready. So if he's not ready and he's not deserving of any of those championships right now, why keep the briefcase on him? Why keep it on him? If Money in the Bank is going to become the annual tradition again and be a match at WrestleMania, then why would you want that briefcase still lingering when you got WrestleMania coming up? You know, you got to take a step back and you got to look at it in a different way. Austin Theory, without that briefcase now, now all the focus is on Austin Theory. Not a fucking tease of a cash-in, not him showing up somewhere unexpected, not a guy can really focus on his shit. So this idea that Austin Theory is getting buried is ridiculous. But, I don't think Austin Theory should be John Cena's opponent at WrestleMania. So I started throwing this around. What do you all think, everyone? Especially with the Hollywood theme. You got the social media icon, Logan Paul, taking on John Cena. I think if Logan Paul has a chance of defeating anyone, I could see John Cena losing to Logan Paul. Logan Paul is not Rookie of the Year. As I have said repeatedly, he's only had three matches. But what do you all think? Would you rather see Logan Paul versus John Cena, or would you rather see Austin Theory versus John Cena? I'd rather see Logan Paul get a victory over John Cena than Austin Theory right now. And I'm a big fan of Austin Theory. I think that dynamic would be really, really interesting to see Logan Paul taking on John Cena. So, Mike, I don't know if there's any way to book this in a good way. Who do you have John Cena face? I don't think anybody wants to see a match with Randy Orton again unless there's a retirement aspect involved with it. Who are you going to put him up against? You going to put him up against Bobby Lashley? You going to put him up against Austin Theory? You know, like, really, I mean, you think about John Cena returning for one match, who would be the ideal opponent? I don't think anybody wants to see Steve Austin versus John Cena. Steve Austin has just got to kick a mud hole into someone. You could have Steve Austin beat the fuck out of Austin Theory, but what? That's a video game fantasy. I would love to see John Cena versus Steve Austin. But Steve Austin of 2022, he's got to give an ass kicking, and John Cena is not going to be a human punching bag for the majority of the time. You want to see Steve Austin beat up somebody that annoys the shit out of you. You know, the Austin Theories, the Chad Gables, the Brad Shepherds, you know, you want to see people like that get their ass kicked, not legend versus legend. CM Punk versus John Cena, I don't think that would really be good as well. Because, first of all, if John Cena is going to cut the promos that he does, you know, you're going to go in certain areas that probably is not a good idea. I wouldn't even want to see Cody Rhodes versus John Cena. Although that would be an interesting match, I think Logan Paul and John Cena could end up being a pretty decent money-making match. I mean, especially you think about the social media influence with Logan Paul, John Cena could still go. And I think if John Cena is going to help some, you know, elevate someone, you know, Logan Paul's not going to be a full-time wrestler anytime soon. But, you know, I don't think there's any shame if Logan Paul, if he puts on a performance he did with, see, look, I'm not a fan of Logan Paul's. To me, he should be a heel. But we can't deny something here. You look at his work with The Miz. You look at his work with Roman Reigns. You look at his work at WrestleMania. You know, you can't help but to say, this is not a guy that trained to do three moves and he killed it. You know, we put Bad Bunny in that category. Bad Bunny did beautiful in what he had to do. But Bad Bunny trained for one match only, and a couple of specific spots during that match. Logan Paul is training to be able to go with anybody. And sure, it's going to take a long time for that to really get to the point where it should. But you look at Logan Paul's three matches. I mean, each one of them have been top shelf. Not five star, but how could you criticize any one of those three matches? You can't. So you're telling me that Logan Paul, if he puts on a performance like he did against Roman Reigns, you have a problem with that, taking on John Cena? I mean, oh, I don't see where the issue is. But, hey, it's something to debate between now and WrestleMania. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But John Cena is, you know, on the path of wrestling at WrestleMania 39, and we will see quite a bit of Hollywood influence. We'll see special guest referees. We're going to see the movie, you know, spoofs. We're going to see a lot of Hollywood in right. This might be probably one of the most publicized WrestleManias in history. When Hollywood starts taking over around, I would say, February, and they start really starting to push this shit, oh my God, it's going to be fucking everywhere. It's going to probably piss off a lot of people as well that aren't like the biggest WWE fans. So, all right. I'll give you one more thing. WWE taped tribute to the troops yesterday in Indianapolis. I'm not going to give you spoilers, but I will tell you the matches that were taped in case you are interested. Now, even though we did not see anybody from our military perform in any of these matches, they are visiting some of the troops. So when they do air tribute to the troops in December, you will see various WWE stars who also have a military background, like Bobby Lashley and others. They will be visiting troops. You will see segments with those wrestlers. But the matches that they did tape, and again, I'm not giving you spoilers. I will just tell you who wrestled who. We had Tamina and Emma versus Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. We had Braun Strowman versus LA Knight. And we had Imperium taking on Sheamus, Drew McIntyre, and Ricochet. Those are your three matches that were taped for tribute to the troops. I don't know the date that it will air as of yet. Somebody had said to me December 20th, that is a Tuesday. I don't think that is the case. When WWE makes it official, I will let you know. But that is what is on tap for tribute to the troops. So, guys, gals, we've been averaging about 90 minutes doing these shows. We are at 84 right now. So I am going to exit, but I definitely want to leave a very cool story I think you would probably appreciate. You know, I've seen Saraya get a lot of I don't want to say negative reaction, odd reaction. After announcing she was cleared to return to the ring at Full Gear against Britt Baker. Now, Wednesday, we talked about it. When she cut a promo, when she talked about herself and everything she went through, the crowd cheered. When she started throwing shade at Britt Baker, it was a totally different story. We knew all along that Saraya was cleared. You do not put her in that high profile of position and milk it for 6 weeks. You know, people realize she's in AEW now for 50 days, I think, 53 days. She didn't debut 2 weeks ago. But you don't milk it this long just to reveal she can't do anything. So we all knew that she was cleared. It was just a matter of when they were going to make it official on TV. But I see a lot of people like comparing her to Edge returning to the ring, Christian returning to the ring, Bryan Danielson returning to the ring. And I'll be honest with you. The one thing that Saraya has done over the last many years that she's been out that Bryan Danielson did not do, that Edge did not do, that Christian did not do, is she didn't go toe-to-toe with the trolls online. If you said something, you threw strong shade against her, she was in your face telling you, go fuck yourself. She went through a lot. Some of her actions earlier in her life are disgusting. We don't need to revisit it, but you know some of the things that she did, what she allowed. Some of it is awful. But as I've always said, you know, people do make mistakes, especially when they're a lot younger. It's what you do over time that shows if you've truly grown and learned your lesson and matured. And over the years, you know, Soraya, you could see the maturity, you know, after her relationship with Alberto El Patron. I mean, that was just a dumpster fire. And people that were hardcore Paige fans were trying to convince themselves that Paige was just a victim there. You know, the cell phone, remember that cell phone stabbing stuff? It blows my mind that that never became like the big story that it should have been. But there was some wild shit going down at that time, and she had a ton of demons along with it. You take the demons, you take her standing up on social media going at some people for going after her. She, over the years, was not one of the most well-liked people around. But you have to admire where she was and where she is now, because she's definitely done a hell of a lot to heal herself, to make herself a better person. And I thought it was really cool when she did an interview with Renee Paquette this week. She told Renee that the minute she got cleared, the first person that she called was Sasha Banks. Because Soraya, I mean, we knew a lot of this already, but when you hear it straight from Soraya, it just hits you a little bit differently. Soraya was talking about how this has been traumatic for Sasha Banks, and it still haunts her to this day. It's not on the level of Draz, but I always remember what happened with Draz and D'Lo Brown. And, you know, look, accidents happen. And I talked to D'Lo Brown many times back in the day. But you always had this sense deep down inside that that guilt never goes away. Even if it's an accident, the guilt never goes away. You could have a car accident and just slipped on ice and you seriously injure someone. You know, that guilt stays with you forever. You could convince yourself 1,000 times over, oh, I hit ice, I wasn't speeding, I didn't do anything wrong, so hey, shit happens, it's an accident, what are you going to do? There's always that guilt still. And the guilt that Sasha Banks had, even though she shouldn't have, she still had it. And the first person that Soraya called was Sasha Banks to let her know that she's cleared. And a lot of tears were shed, and I thought that was very, very cool of Soraya to do. And it's cool for Sasha Banks, because look, for all of you out there that want to see Sasha Banks return to wrestling, you know, the one thing about Sasha Banks that I think we'll all agree upon is Sasha Banks in wrestling is determined not on her wrestling ability, not on injuries, but it's determined based on her level of happiness. Think about it. Sasha Banks in wrestling and what goes down with her in wrestling, it seems to be based on a level of happiness. And there was a lot of unhappiness with Sasha Banks a couple of years ago, earlier this year. And I think Sasha Banks being able to take the 6 months off. Remember what I said 5 months ago? Remember when I said, you know, Triple H, I could picture take 6 months off. Do what you want to do. Have a blast. Just don't wrestle, you know, since you're under contract. You know, do what you do. Go in the runway, go there, go do it. Do everything that you've been wanting to do. And then we'll revisit it towards the end of the year. That's how I always perceived that this was. Plain and simple. I don't think there's been any fighting on both sides. They can't come to a deal. They can't renegotiate this. Lawyers are this. There's a people out there that just can't figure out what to talk about. They want to keep it out there. So they got to give a little controversy. Just like the Cody Rhodes stuff. I will never fucking forget WrestleMania weekend when a certain journalist talked to a podcaster and said, you know, it's not guaranteed that, you know, Cody will actually be at WrestleMania, that, you know, I heard that it's, you know, it's still up in the air. Fuck you. And I respect this person, but fuck you, man. Everybody knew for months that it was signed, sealed, and delivered. He's returning, period. But people, up until the last minute, they got to keep that. Oh, MJF, we don't even know if he's going to take on Wardlow that night. Bull fucking shit, man. You know, people got to do that shit. So Sasha Banks, her level of happiness right now feels like it's up this high. I think the news finding out that Saraya is cleared just makes it even better for Sasha Banks too. So very, very cool. I wanted to share that. So one other thing that I think you might want to know about Saraya. She said that as of right now, the doctor said that she should only wrestle a maximum of one match a month. Just one match a month. Now, yes, she could work out in the ring. She's training. You know, she's not just sitting on her ass, you know, on social media or on Twitch or whatever. She's training. But as far as having an in-ring match televised, stuff like that, one per month for now. So after Full Gear, you know, don't expect her to be hitting the ring anytime soon. Maybe tag team match, six-woman tag match. You know, I could see something there where she gets to do a little bit. But basically, they want her to take baby steps. And even though it sounds a little common sense, they also told her, if you don't feel right, don't wrestle. You know, it's not that easy. You know, it's not, I'm sure a lot of people don't feel right after they wrestle. They have aches and pains. But they just don't want her to overdo it. So baby steps. Baby steps. This is going to be a good match. But they're obviously going to take a lot of precautions. You know, there's a lot of other interesting things, too. You know, I read that Saraya, you know, I think she made a comment that she has PTSD now in some form of it. That, you know, if someone's going to fight her, you don't attack her from behind. Which, you know, I know that may not sound like that big of a deal. But how many times you see someone in the ring, they're cutting a promo or, you know, they're touting to the fans and then somebody just decks them from behind. Apparently, that is a no-no right now with Saraya. So that's going to be interesting only because when you're a wrestler, it's just human nature. It's just like riding a bicycle. You do things because you just do it. And I'm telling you, at some point someone is going to attack her from behind or give her a shot from behind and not consciously remember that, you know, you can't do that. So, all right, everyone, I'm going to jet out of here. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you enjoyed it, take a moment, hit that thumbs up. It helps more than you know. I hope everybody has a great weekend. If you're around Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I will be here doing a sit down with yours truly. Now, remember, next week will be the go home Dynamite and the go home Rampage for Full Gear. So I will probably do predictions for Full Gear on Wednesday of next week. Now, programming note, I'm going on vacation the day before Thanksgiving and I will not be returning until Sunday. Survivor Series is Saturday. I will not be doing a live recap of Survivor Series on Saturday, but I will most likely be doing an abbreviated one on Sunday. Maybe we'll do the Don Tony show Sunday and mix that in as well. But just a little programming note that I will be off that Wednesday and that Saturday. So, all right, everyone. No, Nomad. Survivor Series is Saturday. It is not Sunday. So I will not be back until that Sunday, which is, I think, the 28th. So, all right, everyone, I'm out of here. Much love. I'll see you all Saturday. Ciao.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're going to like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're going to get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now, that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.